Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. Lorraine Newman is one of the original cast members of Saturday Night Live. She's also a founding member of the legendary improv group, The Groundlings. More recently, she's pivoted to a successful career as a voice actor. Lorraine has used her versatile voice to bring many animated characters to life in TV and movies. She revisits her life and career in a new audio memoir called May You Live in Interesting Times. We caught up with her in her Los Angeles home and kicked off the conversation by asking about what she describes as her bottomless need for attention.
I think I was one of four kids. My parents were not very involved, so I really had to work my ass off to get any kind of attention at all. And I think it's a pretty common story. People kind of go out in the world and try to make up for that in some way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you were 19, you were accepted into the CalArts theater program, but you left a short time later to join an improv workshop with your sister Tracy. And this improv workshop evolved into the Groundlings. What do you remember most about your Groundlings experience?
It was a very exciting build to actually being a legit company, even though by the time I left to do SNL, it was still in relatively new. But we were the only game in town in terms of an improv company. And we started to get a following and reviewed by the LA Times and other legit newspapers. So that was very exciting. And it was exciting to go from being just a workshop to a real company.
Mm-hmm. What did you learn about yourself from studying improvisation?
That I'm better off writing monologues. I'm not the greatest improviser. There are a lot of people, of course, I've seen that are just staggering. And those are people that can come up with funny stuff in the moment. I'm usually like, I contribute to the idea moving forward, but I'm not necessarily funny. That's why I chose to do characters, because I had a chance to think about what I was doing, to write and craft my pieces so that I could try to be funny in a different way.
Yes, and one of the character monologues you created was a valley girl named Sherry. Can you tell us a bit about Sherry?
That came out of just observing the fact that there was a really certain kind of speech I noticed amongst people I went to school with and my twin brother's friends that he went surfing with. And this I started to observe like in the 60s when I was still in high school. And I've always been fascinated with dialects anyway. And it was just an amalgam of a friend that I went to school with. Just kind of, there was a sweetness to the character, kind of born of their lack of awareness, shall we say.
Like my boyfriend Brad and I were just really falling apart. You know, we had this really nice relationship. We were going to get married and everything. And, well, like, he installed stereo systems and customized fans, you know. And all he ever talked about was woofers and tweeters and push-pull rods, man. And it was really boring. It really grossed me out royal.
My fellow Canadian Lorne Michaels saw you perform with the Groundlings twice. And after that second time, he asked you to meet him at his hotel. He was staying at the Chateau Marmont. Can you tell us about this meeting?
Well, I'm thinking, I guess that was the first time I'd ever gone there. And we met out at the pool. So there was just like a, you know, one of those umbrellaed tables with chairs and everything. And as I'm walking past the pool to where we're sitting, I see like David Warner and Lauren Hutton, all these kind of famous people just sunning themselves. And then we sat down and I had become friends with him at this point, so I really had no idea what he was going to talk to me about. I mean, I figured it was a show because that's my initial encounter with him. But when he described it to me, you know, he said it was a replacement for Carson reruns on Saturday nights, and it was only going to be 13 weeks with a five-year option. And I remember thinking, like, that'll ever happen.
So you moved to New York City, and what was that first season of SNL like for you?
Well, it was a period of adjustment. It was adjusting to living in New York, I was robbed when I got there. Oh, I had driven cross country with everything I had, including my written material from the Groundlings. And that was all taken away. I just had the clothes on my back. That was it. And like a little overnight case because I was like in a hotel. That was disorienting, to say the least. And getting to know, you know, everybody, although Gilda was my first friend and really kind of squired me around and introduced me to all her friends, which was so nice of her. But it was adjustment, trying to figure out how to get airtime, to get writers to get your characters and maybe write for them. It was different than what it was at the Groundlings because I wrote with my sister, and so I had an automatic writing partner who really knew what I could do, and I was without that.
Yeah. You later discovered that you weren't the only one experiencing these feelings of fear and anxiety during that first year. Your fellow cast members were also dealing with these emotions. How different do you think things could have been if you had all confided in each other at the time while it was going on?
Oh, wow. That's an interesting question. I don't know. I think it might have been better for all of us if we, you know, I think that's what fellowship is all about, you know, knowing that you're not the only one.
Yeah. The first time you performed your Sherry the Stewardess character on SNL was in a sketch called Godfather Group Therapy with that week's host, Elliot Gould. Can you tell us a bit about this sketch?
Well, they kind of just plugged in my monologue from The Groundlings, except one of the most well-known lines from it was written by them, which was, "Vito, you're blocking." I thought it was just a great premise, and I was thrilled to have a chance to do something that I felt confident with.
So I knew I had a bitchin' bod and a good personality, so, you know, I just left town and I became a stewardess, you know, and then I grew so much emotionally, I couldn't believe it, because, like, I went back to Encino and everybody seemed so immature, it was unreal, you know? You know, Doctor, I think you're... that Norman Mailer is right. You can't go home.
Okay.
John Belushi did a great Marlon Brando impression, and so did Peter Boyle. So when Peter guest hosted, everyone was brainstorming about Brando's sketch ideas. What did you suggest?
Well, we were all kind of gathered about home base, which is where the hosts do their monologues. And it was a rehearsal day, and they were kind of, you know, coming up with premises, you know, like Planet of the Brandos. And everybody was just pitching these things. And I kind of just absently, I swear to God, I don't even know where this came from, but I just absently said, "Dueling Brandos." And so that was it. That's how that happened.
I could have been a contender. I could have been someone instead of a bum, which is what I am. Let's face it, Charlie. Could have been Senator Corleone, Governor Corleone. There wasn't enough time, Michael.
Yeah, that's gold, Lorraine. Gold.
That's why, really, if I good. Hadn't been there, they would have come up with it within two days rather than one.
No, that's the Lorraine Newman touch. Nobody else could have come up with that, I don't think. What is your proudest accomplishment on Saturday Night Live?
Oh, my goodness. Well, it depends on the day you ask me. Because I don't really feel, and I write about this in the book, that I had too many shining moments. But, you know, there were certainly a lot of moments where I was handed something and it didn't really gel until airtime. So the Barbra Streisand thing did not seem to be as wonderful as it turned out to be. Not because the writing wasn't great, but because I didn't know how to imitate Barbra Streisand. I was like a Linda Ronstadt gal. So, you know, I was getting tips from the most unlikely sources, the guys in the band. I mean, I got it from the people in makeup, which I expected, but not the guys in the band. So it was, you know, it was things like that. You know, when Danny had left the show, we were doing another bad playhouse or bad something, which is usually hosted by his character, Leonard Pinth Garnell. And they gave me Lady Pinth Garnell, and I had just seen Murder on the Orient Express that day. So I thought, Wendy Hiller. So I went with that, and it worked. So, you know, I would point to those in the sense that I kind of came through when I didn't know that I could.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you had more shining moments than you think, because my sense is from listening to your memoir and talking to you now that your inner critic is very loud. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah. And yeah. I think that the comments I've been getting from readers is that they related a lot. And I was determined to be honest about that, too, because to some extent, I felt it was shameful, the thoughts that I was having and the insecurity and the jealousy and the envy. You know, these are qualities that, you know, they're not particularly glamorous or attractive. But I had never read people talking about that in a memoir. And I just thought, damn it, it exists. It's part of human nature. And, you know, I'm going to fall on the sword and be the one, you know.
Yeah, no, and I'm glad you did, because that was one of the parts I could really relate to, because I have a very loud inner critic. Actually, probably more than one. So that way, it's nice to know that it's comforting. It's like, you know, getting back to that question of how would things have been different if all the cast members had shared their feelings of fear and insecurity. It's good to know that we're kind of all, we're not as special as we think we are, kind of thing.
Exactly. How, yeah. Thank goodness.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. 1989 was a really rough year for you. Gilda Radner died of ovarian cancer. And then 2 months later, your mother died of bone cancer. If you don't mind my asking, what was the last thing you said to your mother?
I said to her, I'm going to be fine. I'd been sober for like a year and a half. So she got to see me get sober, which I'm so thankful for. So that was really the last thing I said to her. And she said to me, it's dull to be good, isn't it? Oh, God. That broke my heart.
Yeah, yeah. I can imagine it would, yeah. You've pivoted to a very successful second act with a career as a voice actor for animated films and TV.
Oh, that's Shelley Vernachek. Sad, really. Husband up and left her years ago. Now she sits at home playing solitaire on her iPad. She's internationally ranked as one of the loneliest women in the world. Biscotti?
How does voice acting compare to real-life acting in movies and on TV?
Well, you only have one instrument as opposed to your body and your face. And also just the interesting thing that happens when a camera transposes a scene that is framed. You know, there's something very different about photography and motion pictures, Doug.
You returned to SNL for the SNL 40th anniversary special, and you had an idea for one of the sketches. Can you tell us about that?
Well, I remember watching the Californians throughout the years and just thinking, ah, I would have loved to have been in that sketch. And then when I heard that there was going to be a 40th anniversary, I called Lorne and I said, you know, I don't know if you guys are going to be doing sketches, but I think it would be really fun to have Sherry as the matriarch, because a lot of soap operas have like the matriarch, to put that character in the sketch if you do it. And I didn't think anything would come of that. But then Fred Armisen called me and said, let's write something. So in my kitchen for several days, we laughed our asses off. And of course, nothing that we wrote ended up in the sketch, but we did have a lot of fun.
What's going on, you guys? You're being super loud. I was having a therapy session on the phone. He was giving me some real insights, but I almost didn't hear it because you guys were arguing.
It's a great sketch and a great idea on your part, and you had a great cast. Bradley Cooper, Taylor Swift, Betty White.
I know, yeah. It was great.
Yeah, so this time around, your SNL experience was a lot happier and more fulfilling, right?
Yeah, it was. I mean, we'd all grown up. It's like any kind of high school reunion, you know, as you go to the later ones, they're so much better because we've all kind of arrived at who we're going to be. And any kind of insecurity or resentments or fears or whatever have kind of gone by the wayside with maturity. And we're all just glad to be alive. And that kind of joy really informed the whole feeling of that show. Everybody was just so happy to see everyone.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Very well said. What is the most important thing you learned about yourself while working on your memoir?
That I can change, that I can overcome things, that preconceived notions I have about myself aren't set in stone. I always wanted to write this book for various reasons, which changed over the course of having written it. But I just never imagined that I could write a book. So that, I think, is really a major thing that I learned about myself, is that I could.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lorraine Newman, thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Doug.
Lorraine Newman is the author of the audio memoir, May You Live in Interesting Times. She's also an original cast member of Saturday Night Live and a voice actor for TV and film. Find out more about Lorraine at WPR.org/beta.
There was something kind of miraculous about the idea that these people all conspired to come together in an attempt to not let Aretha go so easily.
Writer Hanif Abdurraqib joins us to talk about the Black funeral and other kinds of Black performance in America. That's coming up in just a moment. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.